How does someone go from line cook to director of marketing for successful companies in Silicon Valley? We're going to find out with today's guest, Claire Bird. Currently the Director of Competitive Marketing at Twilio, Claire was previously the Director of Marketing and Content at Envision, and way before both of those, was a line cook and a private chef. Claire is with us today to share actionable advice for designing a successful career in marketing and beyond.
Lots of people in marketing roles are asked every day to just do it the way that the competitors do it, and that's actually the opposite of success. That's just contributing to this echo chamber and this fatigue from content and marketing that we see on the internet.
I'm Haley Griffiths, and this is The Science of Social Media, a podcast by Buffer. Buffer is a simple way to manage your social media. Let's kick things off with my chat with Claire. Hi, Claire. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Hi, thanks for having me.
I'm so excited about this interview. There are so many of us at Buffer that are really big fans of your work and your career. And for anyone that doesn't know, you've had a very successful career in marketing. You were previously the head of marketing and content at Envision, and now you just moved over to Twilio, where you're their director of competitive marketing. So congratulations on all of that.
Thank you so much. It's been fun.
It's very cool. Well, what's interesting here is, from what I saw on your Twitter profile, you started out working as a line cook. Is that correct?
That is correct. I had every intention growing up of becoming a chef ever since I was about 4 years old. And I originally moved to the Bay Area to be a chef, not to be in marketing, in technology.
That's very interesting. What about the Bay Area went food for you? I guess they just have some really great restaurants there.
There are really excellent restaurants here. San Francisco just overtook New York in the Michelin rankings, which Ooh. Is a contentious win for us. But also, I wanted to get away from Ohio, which is where I'm originally from. And California and the Bay Area in particular is pretty far removed from my upbringing. So I just fell in love with it and never wanted to leave.
That's amazing. Far enough away. That's wonderful. So can you take us through the journey of your career? How did you go from getting to San Francisco with the dreams of becoming a chef to now doing all these amazing things in marketing?
Sure. So I moved to the Bay Area to become a chef, like I said, and I actually got a job as a private chef on someone's estate in the Berkeley Hills.
Oh, wow.
And I was very lucky to land that job. But being in food and beverage in the Bay Area is a very hard life. And my ultimate goal, which I'm sure we'll get to later, is actually not be in technology marketing. It's to have my own charitably focused food and beverage concept. So I wanted to hack at getting to that place without having to put in 15 years of peeling potatoes. It's very, very hard to move up the ranks in food and bev. And I did have some skills from where my parents had forced me to go to college before I moved to the Bay Area that I could repurpose. And so I just started to do that. I found a job at a desk in a technology consulting firm doing operations for them, which ultimately led to me just writing basically everything for them. I studied language and English in college and have been a strong writer my whole life. And I've always written no matter where I've been. Even when I was in the kitchen, I would still be writing menus. I'd be writing marketing material for websites, copy, just everything.
That's so awesome.
I just decided to lean into that. And while I was at the desk, I was trying to find a job that would unify my love of food and my love of words. And I ended up finding this opportunity on Craigslist of all places for a marketing coordinator for a locally funded and locally produced beverage startup. And they needed someone who was willing to go to events and leverage their industry relationships to actually like do events in people's space with this beverage company and also write all their blogs material and their marketing copy and do partner marketing and a whole bunch of other stuff. And they also needed that person to basically be a slave, which I was because when your expectations are low when you come from food and bev from a salary perspective. So that company ultimately led me to Tony Hsieh and the Zappos family of brands. The company that I stumbled onto was founded by a founding member of the Delivering Happiness brand. And they liked my work on the beverage startup. So they picked me up and dropped me on Tony's projects, and that led me to here. So from there, I've just been making strategic moves into technology and into the markets that I wanted to work in. Envision, being a creative myself, being a writer, was incredibly appealing to me to work specifically and solely on a creative brand. And my move into Twilio was to really understand a public business, a business that is bigger and at greater scale than the startups I'd worked at previously.
That's all very interesting. This is such a fascinating journey. I'd love to dive in even more. So it sounds like you have thought through every stage before you take a new job or before you make a move. You've always planned what the strategy might be for going to that next move.
Yes, that's true. I think it's definitely clarifying to have a goal for your future in mind. And mine is, like I said earlier, a charitably focused food and beverage concept. So to do that, I needed to understand a number of things. I needed to understand the food and beverage industry, which I feel very comfortable in, but also savvy businesses and interesting ways to market your products and interesting ways to increase your margins, your gross margins on products. Those are the things that most people who are in food and beverage have no idea how to do or what those words even mean. So I really have been intentional and honest with myself about recognizing the gaps in my skill set and finding ways to learn by doing and leverage my experience in marketing to get into new businesses and new verticals and learn new ways that people think about products and businesses.
That's all very interesting. I love what you just said there in finding the gaps in your skill set. And when you say skill set, you mean the skill set of like your future. If you had every skill you would need to make sure that you could have this charitable organization running properly, you would need, you know, A, B, and C. And so you've just been going about trying to make sure that you really get A, B, and C properly.
Yes, absolutely. So I feel like I've got A and B down pretty good, which is food and bev and marketing to broad audiences. And now I'm looking for experience with businesses at scale, because ideally I'd love to franchise my idea one day, and also nonprofit organizations. It's not very broadly known, but Twilio actually does have a completely nonprofit arm called Twilio.org, which is focused on bringing comms to underprivileged and underserved communities.
Wow, I love this. I love how you've really been able to take this big idea for what you'd like to do in the future and break it down into all of these steps. Isn't that something that took you a while to see the full picture of what those steps would be?
Honestly, no. And this is 100% pulled out of my experience in the kitchen. This is like a very foundational thing for me. It's called mise en place, which means all things in their place. When you're creating a dish in a kitchen, you have to have every single little piece of your thing prepared before you even start cooking. And that's how I approach life and my job. Every single time that I launch a new product, I'll spend quite a long time thinking through the details and the edge cases and all the assets that are necessary, all the way down to the timing of the communication design before I actually start producing anything, because that gives me a whole bunch of clarity on what I need to accomplish. And then I can alter that in real time based on feedback I'm getting while the campaign is actually running. It's just a more intentional way to go about my life and my work.
It's really cool to see the parallels between cooking and marketing. I don't think I had thought of those before, or at least cooking and goal setting. And so the initial ability, so you mentioned that you were already a really strong writer. And when you got into marketing, what were some of the initial skill sets that you had to acquire that may have been more difficult than others?
I had to learn what marketing actually was. I don't have a formal marketing background. I just had a relatively decent ability to write for audiences. And I used that to the best of my ability. That's why I ended up in content marketing. The foundation of content marketing is good writing at the end of the day. Editorial is still one of the strongest channels for any content marketer to really focus on. And it was a very easy transition for me to begin writing more long form content instead of just web copy, and really kind of reverse engineering people who I thought were doing a good job. So HubSpot is a very clear example. And when I started doing this 7 years ago, they were on the rise as a best practice tastemaker in the industry. And so I would just take their campaigns and rip them apart and build them backwards. and start from the very beginning, opt myself into their flows, understand the way that they were working, and then just build them myself. So I guess mimicry is a form of flattery. I hope that they feel okay. And I hope that all of the other people who I maybe stole some stuff from in the beginning also see it that way. But marketing in general, understanding marketing strategy, was definitely the biggest gap in my skill set. I didn't know anything about it. And so I spent a lot of time. I tried to learn by doing and observing. I'm very much an observational learner. So I spent a lot of time just in the industry experiencing other people's marketing strategies and figuring out how to do them and how to apply what they were doing to my own work.
Awesome. It sounds like the two steps here were borrow heavily and observe very, very well.
Mm-hmm. Yes, borrow heavily is a good way to put it.
That's what I thought of, because I think that a lot of our work can all be adapted on by different people. And it is definitely very flattering to have someone think that what you've done is so good that they can build on it. So how did you come across HubSpot the first time you saw them? Were you just looking for any of the top marketing materials you could find?
It's the classic inbound marketing play. I didn't know how to do something. I Googled it. I found an excellent ebook written by HubSpot, opted in, gave them, paid with my email address, got their entire nurture flow, and ultimately ended up buying HubSpot at Envision. So definitely a great case study for success. But I was trying to do things that I had no idea how to do. And learning through the community and the marketing community itself became a very powerful tool for me, especially because at that point, mentorship was not as big of a hot topic as it is now. I definitely think that is changing as the practice becomes more mature, but mentors were really difficult to find. And especially for a food and beverage, ex food and beverage person with no formal marketing degree, it became very challenging. So I just crowdsourced my education.
I love it. So you don't have a mentor then?
I do now. And I am very, very grateful for his help. He's helping me learn about another gap in my skill set, which is the performance marketing side of the house. So I know and recognize that I'm very strong on the creative side of the house, but have gaps in the performance side. And so my mentor is now helping me think through growth from a product perspective, how to build a scalable acquisition channels, etc.
Very cool. And so you did not have a mentor when you were first starting out?
Correct. I've only had a mentor for about a year now.
Oh, very nice. And it would have almost been challenging to find a mentor in the beginning if you didn't know what you needed to do. So it almost makes sense that you went after information that was more widely available to learn first.
Well, that's excellent post-rationalization.
I'm trying to rationalize it. I don't know.
And I'm totally okay with saying I didn't know what I was doing. I try to be very real about my own experience and that I learned through trial and error. And that's one of the biggest takeaways that I have gleaned from my time in marketing, is just to be fearless, to not be afraid of failure, and to try stuff, just do things. And you will find that at least in my experience, that experimentation will lead you to a better program than just trying to prescribe whatever the best practices are for your industry.
That's some great advice for people who might be starting out. And so what are some of the challenges that you've come across in your career that might also be appealing to those people that are particular challenges that you've found that are happening in marketing? And how did you work through them?
Well, being a content marketer, selling the content vision is always challenging. Content is such a long tail program. It takes a long time to build readership. It takes a long time to show ROI on this program, but it is a very sustainable long-term program. However, I've always found that convincing someone who is skeptical of content and would much rather to see immediate results that are pretty or vanity metrics has been very challenging. And the way that I've gone about solving that is by learning how to measure directly attributable revenue to content programs. Because even if you can't say that you're ROI positive, you can at least say that you have the ability to, because you have direct visibility into how much money, how many dollars your content program is generating. That also creates a great feedback loop for yourself to check your own assumptions about your program and understand that maybe something that you think is your baby is actually a whole lot of work and not a lot of dollars. So I think that being able to measure your impact beyond brand metrics, beyond resonance and share a voice and how many retweets you get on Twitter, et cetera, is really, really important.
That's very true. And I feel like this applies to so many things in marketing. So you mentioned content marketing, but I think for social media, like you said, with retweets as well, it's a similar idea that you need to be able to measure and prove its value.
Absolutely.
I want to touch on some of the abilities as well. So some of the skills and abilities, to go back to that for just 1 second, because we talked about editorial, we've talked about strategy and trying thing. Was there anything I missed there? Since social media is changing so frequently, we've covered a couple of them, but is there any kind of skill that you'd want to add to someone who is trying to improve on their skills based on how quickly everything changes in social media?
In social media, obviously be an early adopter to every new technology. That's important. Stay ahead of the curve with regard to the technology that's being produced, not just necessarily for social, but for anything that touches social. So marketing automation, any kind of publishing platforms, things like Looker analytics systems, share of voice and listening technologies, if you can, your company has the budget for it. Everything like that is really incredibly important, just to understand the pulse of the industry. Beyond that, there is a special set of creative requirements for someone who to be successful in a social role, because I find content marketing to be like being an essayist. You have space to express yourself in whatever way you want to. You can make complex points. Being social media is more like being a poet. You have to be incredibly impactful and distill everything down into 140 characters or less. And I think that thinking through how you're going to do that and actually practicing that distillation process is incredibly important. When I'm teaching someone who's new to social media how to do social media, I play the 50-50-50 game, which is you write something, then you cut it in half, and then you cut it in half again, and then you cut it in half again. And when you have that last version, you are probably in a place where you can start writing social posts from it.
That's such a cool game. And do you do that with blog posts?
I do if they need to be turned into micro content. Otherwise, I try to keep the integrity of the piece high. If it's a blog post, I don't want to falsely hinder someone's thought process and the way that they communicate that thought process. But I think that the distillation process, when it comes to at least my programs, comes from us. So like, if we have to play the 50-50-50 game, what are we going to focus on when we distribute this piece? But I do want to give the author of the piece the ability to be free with their thoughts.
That makes total sense. Are there any other sort of exercises that you might run someone through if they're new to social media or marketing in general?
It's not necessarily an exercise or a cute game like the 50-50-50 game, but
which is very cool.
But the concept of mise en place is actually something that I found is missing from most marketers' skill sets. And that's something that I try to teach at the very beginning when I'm bringing someone in, is that at Envision and at Twilio, we will do things differently. We will think about things from a holistic, integrated campaign perspective, and we will know everything that we need to make before we start making anything. And there is some lead time there, obviously, but it's worth it to be hyper clear on what things need done when, and don't have any like chaotic nonsense to deal with while you're actually releasing something.
I feel like we could learn from this at Buffer too. I'm going to take this back to the marketing team.
Yeah, it's very much and I feel like lots of people get stuck in the progress, not perfect mentality, which I think is a very powerful thing. Progress is definitely more important than perfection. I just think that the balance can be hard to find. And for me, this process of documenting and literally writing down every single thing that needs done and when before we actually start producing anything has definitely decreased like the need for feeling like progress not perfect needs to happen, because it's a scalable, sustainable, repeatable process that we do over and over and over and over again that prevents us from needing to fall back on that as an excuse.
Yeah, I love that. And so Is there anything that you would have done differently in your career? You've had so many really neat turns and you've planned a lot. I'm so impressed and inspired by how much thought you've put into every part of your career. But is there anything that you would look back at and maybe have done differently, or a perspective that you might have changed?
I wish that I would have gotten to fearlessness sooner. Another challenge that I think many marketers will face is getting sponsorship or executive sign off on a moonshot, on something that is risky. Like risk is where the reward is. And if you can identify the right type of risk, then you reduce the overall amount of risk if you identify the right stuff. But ultimately, it's very hard to get sponsorship on things that are risky. And I found that my best programs have always come from a place of immense risk. So Design Disruptors is a great example of a giant risk that we took, and held that risk because we were capable of it, but turned it into something that was incredibly successful. And I think that if I had had that mentality earlier and was less afraid or less feeling like an imposter, like less imposter syndrome, then perhaps some of my earlier programs would have been even more explosive. And I feel like that is one perspective that can be hard to hold on to in the marketing space, especially when people are very much of the opinion that we need to experiment and iterate on small scale things before we take a big step. And that's not always the right decision, in my opinion. It often can be, but there is some level of risk and reward that most people need to be braver about standing up for.
Yeah, absolutely. And for anyone who has not had a chance to check it out, Design Disruptors is a feature-length documentary, and it wound up being shown in over 100 cities around the world.
Yeah, it's still going. That film is probably the highlight of my career to date. It's been seen by over 50,000 people. We've done 1,400 community events. We did 8 premieres in 5 countries. It's just been incredibly awesome.
Yeah, that's amazing. And it's such a good example of the fearlessness and the risk taking that you mentioned, because, you know, you're doing a content marketing program at Envision and that's all going really well, but to convince everyone or to get everyone on board with doing this feature length documentary, which is obviously going to be a ton of resources and a lot of everyone's time, and you've never done anything like this before, like, that's just a great example of something that turned out so well but was an enormous risk.
Absolutely. And I think that the identification process is the important part that often gets glazed over. We knew that there was a need for something like this, and we knew that we could do it from a resources and creative perspective, but also that no one else was going to. And so another perspective that I wish I would have had earlier in my career is the concept of stepping away from competition. And lots of people in marketing roles are asked every day to just do it the way that the competitors do it. And that's actually the opposite of success. That's just contributing to this echo chamber and this fatigue from content and marketing that we see on the internet. People don't even look at banner ads because they've been so fatigued by them. But if you can think differently about the channels and you can find a way to step away from your competition, talk about something different, do things differently, make different stuff, anything to step away from your competition, you will automatically get attention because it's different. People are fickle. So I think that is those two things, as being fearless and stepping away from your competition, are two very foundational things for me in my career. And I wish I would have gotten there sooner.
I love both of those. What's really interesting in stepping away from the competition is that kind of also plays into the risk reward that you were talking about earlier, because what everyone else is doing, they're doing it probably because it's working. So in stepping away from what is the norm, sometimes there's some risk there, but I think that ultimately what you've shown is that there can be even greater reward.
Well, absolutely. And I think that it's working, in quotes, making quotes in the air, you can't see them. Is an assumption. That's an assumption that we make, but we don't actually know if that's true. People just do what other people are doing because they assume it's working for them, but they don't actually know that. You don't actually know if that channel is working for that company or not. because they probably took it from someone else and someone else, et cetera. And it's like Xeroxing, or it's like a photocopy of a copy of a copy. So I don't necessarily think that that is even true. I think that we make this assumption and we tell ourselves this story that if, oh, this person is doing them, then it obviously works, but that's not always true.
Yeah.
And I think that Buffer is actually an excellent example of someone who did things differently. I mean, I've been a Buffer fan for a long, long time.
Oh, and thank you.
I know that you, I think the company started very much with a, we're going to do things a little differently mindset. And then they kind of tripled down on that idea with this radical transparency concept. And that's so different. And I honestly, from my perspective and a marketing perspective, would attribute a lot of the success on the brand side to that ability to step away from the competition in social media and have their own point of view.
Yeah, definitely. We've absolutely seen with Buffer that the radical transparency, so for example, putting everyone's salaries online, has mm-hmm. put us so far away from other people in our space that sometimes we get asked questions purely about our culture. And then they find out later, they're like, oh, and you're a social media marketing software. It is just so fascinating to see how marketing plays a part in all of this for me. I know that, you know, Kevin and I and the whole marketing team, we've been following along with some of the things that you're doing. And we see you as such a successful marketer. And it's really interesting because I think that a lot of successful people in marketing, that's their goal, is to stay in marketing. Maybe not. Maybe I'm wrong about that. But I think it's really interesting to see your perspective of taking marketing as a tool and using it to apply it to a whole other industry that you want to be a part of.
Yeah, I think that that is, if I had to take or give one other piece of advice, it's transferable skills. This has probably come up implicitly in our conversation thus far, but everything that I've done and everything that I've been successful with so far has been because of a transferable skill. It's, you know, taking this concept of mise en place and applying that idea to something completely different. You have, the royal you, have skills today that you can apply to your work that will make you different and differentiate you from the other marketers in the space because they are your skills and they do transfer. And like a great example of that is journalists becoming content marketers. Journalists have such an incredible way of going about storytelling and they become excellent content marketers when they take that experience and apply it instead of trying to push it away. So embrace, you know, your uniqueness and apply your skills, transfer your skills.
Very wonderful piece of advice. This fits in really well with ending the podcast on takeaways. You've given so much advice, so maybe we can just summarize your top three, and we can definitely start with transferable skills.
Sure. So, I mean, the idea of transferable skills is something that I don't think gets enough attention in the marketplace in general, where you can take someone from a completely different industry and they can totally blow your mind with something that you didn't even know was possible. A great example is, you know, scientists becoming financial analysts. Same set of skills, really excellent math skills, but focused on a completely different problem. And because they have a completely different background, they are really excellent at solving problems that other people don't even see because they are too deep in their own weeds. So transferable skills, being fearless, or willing to fail. Willing to fail is, I think, what many people talk about, but I'm actually more interested in people who are not afraid in general, just to be brave in the marketplace, take risk, and be honest with themselves about the success and failure of the thing that you took a risk on. That's where it becomes, I think, important. And there's an important distinction between being okay with failing and being fearless and being honest with the results. Then lastly, stepping away from competition, incredibly important. Find something that makes your product or your brand unique, a differentiator from the marketplace. It's not necessarily about your product or your features. It's about your point of view on your industry. And if you can encapsulate that and step away from your competition and become a unique voice with a unique point of view, you will attract a unique audience.
These are all such amazing pieces of advice. Thank you so much, Claire, for joining us today. I learned so much. This has been a wonderful conversation. I super appreciate your time.
Thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for joining us for this episode of The Science of Social Media with our guest, Claire Bird. And a huge thanks to Claire for sharing her career journey in marketing and all of the other places that she's going with us. Brian and I are both always really happy to hear from you on social media too. It seriously makes our day. So feel free to reach out on Twitter and use the hashtag BufferPodcast. And my handle is Hailey Marie. That's HAILLEYMARI. We'd be so happy to continue the conversation there. And if you'd like to hear more episodes like this about the very best in social media marketing, you can find The Science of Social Media on iTunes, Google Play, SoundCloud, and Stitcher. Detailed show notes will be on buffer.com/podcast. Until next time, have fun designing your career in marketing.